life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility, but driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
So as you've noticed, Chance is sitting in for Paul this evening. Thanks for being here, sir.
Well, thank you. And I don't know if they've noticed until now, but you know.
Well, they've noticed because it was on all the social media things. If you're one of those people that leaves us questions and thank you, then many of you have left questions for Chance. We wanted to hear from him partially because, well, Paul's out of town and so it worked out for Chance to be here, but also because he was at Pirelli World Challenge last weekend here locally and we were not. And he's got all these stories and I thought, wait, don't tell me yet. I want to hear him on the podcast. So that's one of the other reasons that he's here. So thanks for being here.
Yeah, man. Yeah, of course. So we're just going to – should we jump right in or do we
want to – well, here's the thing. We do have two car debates. Of course, we make Chance do the work like we do. So we have a car debate for Tim. He's writing from, quote, the Northeast. So he has a question having just bought a Miata that he is in love with. He bought an NA Miata. So now he's got some questions about his daily because the Miata is not being really used as much as a daily as he'd like. And also Connor in Atlanta is writing and his title of his email was, I need a date car.
Yeah, I noticed that.
But very little money, so this will be fun as well. And, of course, many, many great questions across the board on all fronts. So we'll get to those as well. But, yeah, start off, man. I mean, you were there as photographer. You were there as paid photographer all weekend.
I was,
So, yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, so I was there shooting for Reardon Racing, their local racing team based in Salt Lake. They had four BMW M235 IRs, which are basically touring cars. They're stripped out. Big wing on the back, the works. And then they had four Porsche Cayman GT4 Club Sport race cars as well, running in a separate series, but at the same race weekend.
But still, yeah.
Yeah, so it was very busy shooting eight cars for
one
team, having to be bounce around and get different locations in between sessions, and it's just crazy. But I was there for all 4 days, from Thursday to Sunday.
Wow.
And so Thursday, I wasn't even planning on going. I woke up that morning with the intention of going to work. Mm-hmm. And then I just, for whatever reason, felt like I needed to go to the track that day.
Okay.
You know, like you do, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But there's something's going on at the track. I should grab my camera and go. Got it. Yeah.
So I show up and I bump into a photographer friend of mine, Gil Folk, who he's shot for McLaren. He's shot for Mercedes, a few big manufacturers.
Yeah, no, you mentioned that before. Yeah, keep going.
And he's there shooting for a race team based in Reno that's driving a 911 GT3 Cup R, GT3 R, anyways.
Okay, sure. I'll roll
like
with
that.
It. Yeah. And Paul's not here to correct us, so yeah,
right.
Keep going.
And the driver that he's shooting for is Memo Gidley. And some of you may know who that is. Most of you might not. But he was the 2014 24 Hours of Daytona, or the Rolex 24, pole setter.
Hmm.
And about 2 or 3 hours into this race, he had a massive accident.
Oof.
He was in one of the fast cars, and he was in a section of the track where they're driving into the sun at sunset.
Oof.
And he pulls out to pass another car, and there's a slow-moving Ferrari right there. And he just, bam, nails him at, I don't know, there was probably at least 100-mile-an-hour speed differential between the two cars.
Oh, my gosh.
The accident, I mean, you can find it on YouTube. It's very cringeworthy if you dare go watch it.
Yikes.
But, I mean, the race broadcast wouldn't even show replays until they got word of what the driver's conditions were because of how nasty the crash was.
That's awful.
So anyways, jump ahead 3 years later to now, and he's testing this new Porsche. And this is his first time back in a race car since racing and recovering.
Wow.
But you talk to him, and he's... You wouldn't guess that he was in such a massive accident. Watching him move around and just like a normal guy.
Incredible.
He didn't have any like limps or weird movements or anything.
That's
like
amazing.
That, which was just amazing, yeah. And so they were only here testing. They weren't actually racing. But I got to meet this awesome driver
That's cool.
That day. And then jumping ahead to Saturday, which was my crazy day, where I was shooting all eight cars.
Sure, yeah.
And... So I get to the track, and this other photographer comes up to me. He's like, hey, I want to talk to you a little bit later today. It's like, okay. Why?
That could be good or bad. Which way are we going? Yeah.
Yeah. So it turns out he had a scheduling conflict between a couple of his clients with where he had to be during the track. So I ended up he asked me to cover the GT class qualifying session.
Ooh, Cool.
And he shoots for Real Time Racing, which drives two Acura NSX GT3 race cars.
Oh, wow.
So I shot those for during the qualifying session for him.
That's cool.
And that just made the day that much more exciting.
You'll have to post some of those Acura photos because you've shown me a couple, and that car looks really mean in race trim.
Yeah, I think it looks better in race trim than it does in street trim, to be
honest. Yeah, which is crazy because a lot of times with all the sponsors and liveries, I'm kind of like, I just want, of course, here I am. We all know me. I just want a bright, solid color car. And of course, that's not the reality of liveries. But yet something about that Acura is just, it's angry.
It is.
It really looks
great. The canards and the wings.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound all that interesting to me, the V6 turbo.
But that's an uphill battle, though, making anything like that sound great. Yeah. I mean, you know, the GT, the Ford GT, sounds pretty good. And some people are like, oh, it sounds better than the V8. I'm like, V8s and V12s are still winning. But it does, you know, for turbo V6, it sounds great.
Yeah.
But that's a hard engine to make sound good.
It is. And so I was shooting that. If you're familiar with Utah Motorsports Campus at all, I know you are, Todd, but I was shooting at the inside of the Attitudes. So in the infield of the track, looking up, and you can see the cars hitting the curbs getting up on two wheels.
This is like an S-curve section. It's like, think of it that way, but you come over the crest of a hill, and then you go right, left, and then you're into a kind of a left straight.
Yeah, it's similar. I don't want to say it's similar, but it's kind of like the corkscrew in a much smaller, not as steep kind of way.
It has a similar idea.
Right.
Yeah, it has a similar idea because it is this kind of double S-curve thing. And you have to enter – it's weird because if you enter on the line correctly, you enter slow, you'll leave fast. If you enter too fast, you have to bleed speed halfway through.
Right.
And the guys that push really hard – and Chance is talking about being at the bottom of it looking up. It's not as extreme as the corkscrew.
It's not that steep, no.
But there is a really nice rake to it. If you look at any of our track videos that we've done out there, both the Fiesta ST and the Mustang, GT experience have got some great shots that actually Chance took out there because he knows that track really well. You're looking up the hill, and the guys that come hammering down through there can get, I mean, it's called the Attitudes. They'll get some crazy attitude out of the car blasting down there when they nail those curbs.
Yeah. And the Porsche Spec Series, they had Pirelli GT3 Trophy was the warm-up series, if you will.
I love something that sounds angry is the warm-up series.
Yeah, all GT3 911s and Cayman GT4 Club Sports, and they were shortcutting it. They were jumping over the right-hander.
And seriously?
Yeah, and they were like all four off the ground.
Oh, my
jumping.
Gosh.
It was nuts. Now, in
I've
World
seen
Challenge,
that curve. That's like aiming for something and hoping for the best.
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So they're jumping it. In World Challenge, you're not allowed to do that. That's track restriction
penalties. Okay, sure.
People were doing that and getting penalized for it.
Huh,
but the Porsche guys, they just, nope, forget it. I'm going for it.
This car can handle it. I'm just if I can launch myself. That's crazy. Did you get shots of any of them all four
I
off?
I do. I actually sent some to our friend Gavin yesterday. I have two almost identical pictures of two different McLaren race cars.
All right.
And I'll have to show you this after we're done here. But
you should post them too, yeah.
You'd almost think I photoshopped two different cars in because they're in the exact same spot.
Seriously.
With the same wheel off the ground. That's how good these guys are.
Yeah, how accurate they are with their lines.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I'd love to see those photos. And we should post some of them after this podcast goes live. We should certainly do that. That's cool.
So yeah, that was Saturday. It was a whole different experience. This was my first time shooting for a race team.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I go and I just shoot as much as I can, whatever I can.
Yeah. You've been known the last few years to be out there and to get some great stuff. And you've had people that have snatched your photos. I'm giving you a resume here. People that have snatched your photos afterward and actually pursued your photos because they found them and loved that you got their car. So as a result, this year, somebody pursued you and said, we want you to cover the whole race team, which now you're shooting eight cars. I guess the good news is you're not shooting everything that turns a corner, but the bad news is you're really trying to hunt down eight cars.
Well, here's the other thing though. So a few weeks prior, I talked to another photographer about pricing and different questions I had
to
make sure I was in the right ballpark and whatnot. And she was out of town this weekend or that weekend.
Okay. Yeah,
so I ended up filling in for her for the website that she writes for.
Oh,
called
funny.
NA Sports Car.
Okay.
And I haven't sent anything into them quite yet, but I will be here pretty soon.
Wow.
And so I was trying to get some of everything, but I wasn't as, you know, get every car that goes by. Get it now. So I shot fewer photos this year than I did last year.
This was a question I actually wanted. This is the thing I love about digital photography. So how many photos?
I ended up shooting about 8,000 photos this past weekend.
Perfect. Of course you did.
Last year I was about 10,500, which is...
So I will ask the photographer geek question. Do you have any ways, like, what's your first culling pass? How do you go from 8,000 to, okay, now I'm really looking at these? How do you do your first pass of just throwing stuff out?
Well, this year, since I was shooting for a team, I went through them all first and found everything that I needed for the clients.
Sure.
And then I just went from start to finish of all those.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I'm done, I'll export them out of... I use a software program called Lightroom.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
I'll export them out of that, and then I'll go through them and just weed out the duplicates.
Okay.
And then I'll pick the ones that I like best and send them off.
Okay.
And that's the same with...
I just didn't know if you had like a fast way you could go through 8,000 photos quickly and just go, no, well, yes. I didn't know if there was a way you could do that.
The thing
quickly.
About racing photography is most of it is it's almost prey and spray.
Sure.
There's some talent involved, but you're hoping for the best a lot of the time when you're dropping these low shutter speeds.
And you're shooting multi shots at once. I mean, you're firing through as fast as it'll go.
Yeah. So every time a car goes by, I'm getting like 7 or 8 photos just of one pass.
Which is, right. And just to mention this, because Chances isn't saying it, everybody's shooting it that way. And we really, Chance has got to post some of this stuff because he's saying there's some talent involved. That is an understatement in a big way, okay? I can do halfway decent car photography if they're sitting still. Chance has just honed this gift of that went by at a speed that is a blur to the rest of us, and he can capture it. He got some amazing stuff on the 4GT thing that I'm still boggled by because it's, I would actually say it's beyond magazine quality. It's like poster quality, which is really cool.
Oh, thanks.
So I know you're taking a bunch of frames, but I know everybody's taking a bunch of frames. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was talking to one of the other photographers, Bob Chapman, and he told me on Saturday, halfway through the day, so there was still a day and a half left, that he was already at 10,500.
Sure, of course
and
he was.
And he's shooting for Ferrari and Porsche.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's one of the top photographers in the series.
Mm.
But it's just the amount of photos you come away with is just insane. And having to go through it afterwards.
Well, that's where the work comes in.
Yeah.
That's where the work comes in.
Yeah.
I mean, not only you're standing out there for hours shooting, but it's not like you stood out there for hours shooting, came away with 6 photos and went, okay, we're done. You have to cull your way through that massive thing. There's days of work.
Yeah. And back to your original question, how do you weed through them?
Yeah.
Usually if I'm going through them and the ones I can use are usually pretty obvious.
Okay.
Because you're panning.
Sure, of course.
And so either you're going to get the car in focus right,
mm-hmm.
or you're going to be trying to match the car's speed at the same time.
Sure.
And sometimes most of the time, that doesn't always line up. So
framing, focus, all of those things, especially with your low shutter speed. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you're shooting at like 1/40th of a second or slower,
mm-hmm.
your hit rate drops big time.
Sure.
So I'll go through, instead of one every 4 or 5 photos I might use, I'm dropping down to one at every 20 or 30.
Sure, sure.
So you just skip through those and
well, and it's a crazy low shutter speed. I mean, with a massive percentage of chance for blur or misfire when you're chasing a car that's moving that quick. I mean, that's impressive. Yeah.
And the thing I was always told is the idea is to try to make a slow car look fast.
Yeah.
So the slower the shutter speed, the faster the car looks.
Sure, that's true. Well, I mean, here's the thing. I think we've talked about it before. I know you and I have. I don't know if we have on the podcast. But, you know, when you see most time when you see photos of cars in magazines, especially if you see photos of cars in magazines that are concept cars – and it looks like it's speeding toward the frame or whatever, somebody probably put it in neutral and pushed it.
Yeah.
And the shutter speed is slow enough that at walking speed, the world is blurred and the car is in focus. I mean, that is an old-time trick, but used like crazy.
Yeah, so for that kind of thing, they actually put this big arm on top of the car with suction cups, and they hold the camera, the arm holding the camera, and then they push the car or drive it really slowly, and they use like a 20 or 30 second shutter speed and try not to make the boom bounce.
Oh, sure.
Too much.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the struggle with that. I've never tried it, but I have friends that have. And I want to try it sometime.
Yeah. We don't do a lot of shooting at walking speed. And that's the whole problem with the video reality is, you know, we've joked about it before, but honestly, until a car gets 80 miles an hour or faster, it genuinely doesn't look fast on camera.
No.
And so here we are shooting real time, and I refuse to speed things up. And so a lot of times we'll hammer our way around a corner that is labeled 20, and we went way over 20 around some corner and hooned the car. And you look at it on a video and you just go, These guys aren't trying.
Unless there's tire squeal in it, sometimes you can't tell.
Well, but even if there's tire squeal, because you can always do the Dukes of Hazzard thing, and you can put in tire squeal no matter what.
True.
You know, Dukes of Hazzard was notorious for tire squeal on dirt all the time, inexplicably. Yeah. But I was fooled as a kid. But you know, that's the thing is short of tire squeal, it doesn't look quick.
Yeah.
And that is so deceiving. And it's funny because sometimes we'll get comments about how you guys don't drive hard. It's like you haven't been with us on a shoot. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah, we a lot of the times we'll have the owners of the car with us, or a fan comes up to us when we're shooting, and they just, oh, wow, you guys are driving hard.
Well, so many times the owners realize that we're driving their car harder than they do.
Yeah.
And we don't that's the crazy thing. We don't set out to do that. There's never, well, I'm going to show you. There's never that.
No.
But yet at the same time, the number of times I've had owners sit right seat with me and just watch them just kind of ball up in the process.
The eyeballs get all huge.
I'm sorry. Am I bothering you? Happens more than once. Well, that's cool, man. It's good to hear about it, and because we didn't have the chance to go, and I'm glad you did. That's a ton of coverage.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that this leads to more for both the rest of the season and next year.
I think it will. I mean, your stuff is so really high end that, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, honestly, here's the thing. You do great stuff for us on video. Here I'm calling you out publicly. You do great stuff for us on video, and yet your stills are on a whole other level.
Oh, well,
and I'm just boggled by them. So I hope that many other people find you as a result. Well, we should do some car debates. I want to jump into this first one here. This is Tim writing to us from, as he describes, the Northeast. And he's having a trouble with his daily driver. Because as a result of us, we have inflicted him with the disease, and he watched our review of the multiple generations of the Miata many times, yes, and finally bought himself a 1993 NA. So that's the first gen Miata.
Yeah.
And we don't really know a lot about Tim's car history here, but the Miata has been a major turning point. This car is a car honestly, loves is not quite a strong enough word. I shudder to say this, but it's almost like this Miata has been life-changing.
Yeah, he later on the email, he actually says he will never, ever, sell the car.
That's what he does say.
Ever.
Yes. So this is where the problem comes in, because he has this Miata and he loves it. And you're thinking, what's the problem? I mean, it's one of those cars, every time he walks away from it, he just looks back and goes, I love that car. That was so much fun, which is great. And I'm thrilled, Tim, that that's your situation. But the car this replaced, sort of, is his 06 Honda Accord.
Yeah.
But he loves this Miata so much, he keeps finding reasons that I really shouldn't drive the Miata today. I should just take the Accord.
Yeah, things like, oh, if it's raining, or I don't want to leave the car in this maybe sketchy location type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, yeah, I'm driving this Honda way more than I want to, way more than I planned to, way more than I should. And he's just said, it's a great car, but it's just boring. It's not the Miata.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants something to replace that. So he's looking at Fiesta STs, which are great little cars, and that was actually what he was originally looking at buying when he bought the Miata.
Yes.
And said that he went Miata because it was easier to talk his wife into it, because, hey, we can go away for the weekend with the top down.
Or we can go out for dinner. I mean, because, look, honestly, my wife, who kind of has the car disease by default, okay, she kind of tolerates that I have it. But she's not hardcore. I mean, there is a point when talking to my wife when her eyes roll back and she's just like, you know what? I'm car done. I'm filled up. Thank you. Okay. And yet she cannot wrap her brain around why I think the Fiesta ST is cool. She keeps looking at it and just thinks that's a stupid little hatchback. And
right.
She's fairly savvy and she can't get past that. So I totally understand, Tim, the situation of saying to your wife, Fiesta ST. And she went, I'm sorry, what now? But Miata. Convertible top down, let's go out for the night. I totally get why that sells. So this is the dilemma here, is that Tim is going, okay, I'd like to replace this boring car that I'm realizing I'm driving. Really, it has still stayed the daily car.
Yeah.
So keep the Miata nice. And the Miata was cheap. He bought it for around 10 grand. So
yeah, he says well under 10 grand.
He's thinking about, it's crazy. He's thinking about selling this Accord and either buying one of these disposable Fiesta STs we talk about, buying one outright, or leasing one for 2-3 years so he can walk away. This is where he's asking us, and I have thoughts here I don't think I've done on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yes, but because I don't know that the answer here is to change a car.
Huh.
But I want to walk my way there because,
of course,
I'm a Fiesta
ST curious,
fan, but I'm very curious where you went on it.
Well, I like the Fiesta ST idea. And obviously you do too. I think a lot of this email was asking us to kind of justify his decision on wanting to replace it with one. So I just wanted to throw out a couple of other ideas that were kind of in the same realm of possibilities.
Please.
That wouldn't overdo his budget, which he didn't say what exactly it was, but I'm guessing between 15 and 20 based on leasing a Fiesta ST.
Yeah, probably fair. Probably fair. I mean, so, I think for buy, we're probably looking at 15. For lease, we're probably talking right around 2022, because that's essentially what those Fiesta STs are going to lease for.
Yeah. So one of his concerns with getting a Fiesta ST is he's noticing that a lot of newer ones are 6 to 12 months old, and they're already for sale.
Yeah.
And he's worried that because they're such a bare-bones car, is he going to just be a flash in the pan?
Is he going to time out on it?
Is he going to wear out really fast? So I came up with a couple of options that I think might not wear out as fast.
Okay.
Maybe put a smile on his face on his daily commute.
Good, good.
And so my first shot, I tried to stay in the same realm of hatchbacks.
Perfect.
And
perfect.
Preferably, I was looking mostly at four-door hatchbacks, but I was looking at the Fiat 500 Abarth.
Good.
You can
excellent.
Get that.
Excellent. And I want to stop you there. I mean, I'm going to talk about some of these because it's obvious that they're in there. I want to say about the Abarth versus the ST. The ST is better dynamically.
Okay.
But I do think the Abarth might be more of a laugh.
Yeah.
Just
sound alone.
Its personality is more ridiculous, and I mean that as a compliment.
Yep.
The Fiesta ST is blindingly fun to drive and is dynamically surprising every time you chuck it around. But the Abarth is just a laugh.
Yeah.
And so there's a part of me that wonders if the Abarth has, in this scenario specifically, this isn't a track car.
Right, right.
And it's not necessarily a canyon car. You're talking about a car you're going to drive daily. In that regard, for like commute normal errand stuff, I wonder if the Abarth, I'm genuinely wondering out loud, has a longer shelf life than the ST.
It might. It might. The only thing I worry about with the Abarth is I've heard a lot of people say they're not very reliable. They have their issues.
I hate to say it, but Fiat Chrysler would not surprise me in that regard.
Yeah,
I
so
hate to say
that's
that.
Just something to tread lightly and do your research if you end up going that way. But my other options, I looked at the Veloster Turbo. They're
maybe
a good commute car. It's,
sure,
it's not,
sure,
not,
sure.
Not a Fiesta ST, but it'd be they're a little better equipped and things like that.
Well, and I think they've got a more fun personality than that Accord. And Accords are great, but Accords are not fun like we're talking about. Yeah.
But I think my two top picks for you though are the 2013-ish Volkswagen GTI.
Mm-hmm.
They're great commute cars. They've
got
enough power, enough space for your day-to-day use.
And they're going to feel
luxurious.
Thank you for bringing this up because it's going to feel all the luxury stuff that you would like on a commute, but yet they just naturally feel a lot more chuckable than an Accord just because of scale. Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, and they can punch through traffic like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my other choice, this one might actually surprise you a little bit. I think it's kind of a middle ground between the GTI and the Accord, and that's the Mazda Speed 3.
Yes, that is the laugh of a car.
It's got power. It'll have torque steer, so
it'll put a smile on your face. It will keep you awake. Yes, definitely.
And they've got their reasonable interior and luxury. They're not awesome, but they're
no. But you're
they should check all the right boxes.
You're right. They definitely will. Chance, you have done a fantastic job. I'm kind of glad that my recommendation is oddball because you've covered all the things that need to be discussed here.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you did, and you've covered many of the ones that I pondered. I like that.
What's your oddball here?
But here's my thought on a couple of things, Tim. And I'm going to look at this as kind of tough love for you, my friend, because I'm so glad you like this Miata, and I'm so glad that we had even a little part in helping you get one, and I'm glad that you like it. But here's my big thing. I read this email, and I come across one reality. You're being precious with your Miata.
Yeah, I noticed that.
You bought it for less than 10 grand. And hear me out here, Tim. They're great cars. And I speaking as someone who has loved many cars I've liked, I couldn't be more excited that you love your car. But on the other end of the spectrum, they made a lot of Miatas.
They did.
It's not like there aren't tons of them out there. This isn't a car that's going to gain in value. You bought it very cheaply. I'm thrilled that you love it, but my recommendation to you is just use it. In fact, use it up because they keep making more Miatas.
Oh, yeah.
There are tons more out there of all these generations. that Miata could be used up in 2 years. You could drive it every day, do everything possible with it, get it beat on. I know I'm saying things that are horrifying you, but you could get it beat on in a couple years. Go buy another one that would also be great.
Or upkeep. It's really cheap. Parts are super cheap on those things.
True. But I really think that the problem is not that you need a better daily. The problem is, honestly, more so, you need to stop being precious with the Miata and just make it your daily. It's raining today. Okay. It's cold today. All right. There's going to be mud later.
Yeah.
That's fine. Oh, look, there's a rock chip. Trust me. Bummer. But okay. You know? Because, again, Miatas are fantastic, but it isn't a car worth being precious about because they are ubiquitous. There's so many of them.
Yeah, it's true.
So I really think that's the bigger thing here, because you're liking the driving experience so much that anything else you get into, you're going to be going, yeah, but it's still not the Miata. Which brings me back to, so just drive it. Just get in and go and drive and enjoy and be.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
if you are worried about bad weather, then buy yourself a Miata hardtop. They're out there. Keep driving it. You know, put winter tires on it. Drive it. I really think that's my big challenge for you, is just to not be precious with it and just go, I love it. I'm just going to drive it all the time. I'll give you a random example. When we shot our 50 years of 9/11, we did. Now we covered a car of all generations, like 9 cars in that film. But before the first day of our shoot, we gathered kind of anybody that wanted to come from the local Utah, Salt Lake area 9/11 club. And we ended up getting into 15 9/11s in one day.
I didn't know that. Wow.
And one of them was a guy that showed up in a Carrera. I think it was an 87 or an 88 Carrera convertible. And it was the turbo look car. So it looks like the turbo wide body style,
but
isn't a turbo. Gorgeous car, black, convertible, etc. And I started talking to him, and I suddenly realized something shocking. Because this, when we shot that movie, was the height of the ridiculous prices for air-cooled cars. So, you know, you could get money out of them, people were being precious about them, and people were speculating them.
Yeah.
This car had almost 250,000 miles on it.
Wow.
He had bought it, I don't know, like 10 or 15 years prior, and he drove it, I literally mean, everywhere. And before he joined us on that shoot started at noon that day, he'd been in the river fishing, and he opened up the frunk and showed me all of his tackle for fly fishing that he knows nice. How to pack it in the front. And he'd taken it camping, and he'd taken it skiing. It was his all-the-time car. And he put maintenance into it,
but
250,000 miles, he drove it doing everything. And that was even a challenge for me. Because I'm a guy that I don't want to be precious with cars, and yet I was shocked by this guy's just demeanor toward his 911, which was, it's a car, I love it, why would I drive anything else to do anything else?
Yeah.
I love it so much, I'm just going to drive it for everything. That's my challenge to you, Tim.
It actually reminds me of something I saw earlier this week, and that was a guy, I forget where, it was a black 911 turbo,
okay.
930 turbo.
Oh, wow.
And he had 720-something thousand miles on the thing. He daily drives it, it's maintained properly, and he
good
takes
for
it
him.
Everywhere.
Amazing. So, Tim, that's my big challenge, is just make it your daily car, because it's a Tuesday and it's raining and I'm taking the Miata. So that's my challenge. If that is something that you're going to push into a little bit but can't go all the way, I'm going to say this. Also, keep the Accord. This is why this is weird. This is the first car debate ever where I'm actually saying my recommendation is don't make a change other than how often you drive the cars. Don't buy anything different. I think the Accord, put full winter tires on it. If you don't like, let's say, the body roll, one of the easy changes on that is you can put more aggressive sway bars on your Accord and it'll flatten it out some, and it might make it a little bit more interesting. But put full winter tires on it. And so if you have a genuine winter day, that's the only time you drive the Accord. And every other day, anything you do, you drive the Miata. We've spent no new money other than just tires.
Maybe
the sway bars if you want. Then the money you're saving by not buying something new, I'm telling you, Tim, 2-3 years, buy a new Miata. And I just mean new to you. I don't even mean a brand new one.
They're
out there. They're great.
They're everywhere.
That's my recommendation, is don't be precious. Drive that car you love.
Yeah, I'd actually kind of like to add, having been driving my Mustang around a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
I have people think that I'm crazy for driving that car to campus, college campus.
Sure.
And I ask them why. It's like, aren't you worried about getting door dings or the car getting stolen? I'm like, any car could have that happen too.
Sure.
It sucks when it does.
Absolutely.
But you know what? If you're that worried about driving a car and leaving it somewhere, maybe you shouldn't have that car.
Well, there is that question, and Paul and I go back and forth on this a lot because, you know, we joke about Paul being CPO, certified Paul owned, and his cars are pristine. And one of the challenges for him, and he would fully admit this, which is why I'm saying it, one of the challenges for him is just coming to that realization of, you know, I'm just going to drive this thing.
Yeah,
I keep it pristine and gorgeous, which means if I drive it, it's going to get dirty and dinged, and this stuff's going to happen, but I'm going to go get the keys, I'm going to drive it. And some days, that's a genuine challenge for Paul. And other days, he's just like, you know what, I need to drive, I'm going to go. So yeah. That is, that. Depending upon who you are, and I will be honest, I love my Lotus. I loved the FRS. Door dings and like debris dings on the FRS coming out of winter, that bummed me out. But at the same time, yeah, I was like, yeah, but I got to drive this every day, including through the winter.
Right.
And that's just cool.
Right, right. Now, I'm not saying don't be careful.
No, not at all.
I mean, yeah,
no.
You have worries. There's nothing wrong with that.
You need to care for it. Absolutely.
You need to love the car.
Well, that was the thing about this quarter million mile 911, is you would never walk up to it and be like, this guy just trashes this thing. It was great. It was gorgeous. Inside out, it was gorgeous. And yet then you heard the story and went, it's practically your off-road vehicle. How is this possible? I had to shake his hand. It was awesome.
That is awesome. That is very cool.
We have another car debate coming up for Connor in Atlanta, but we will be right back.
There are 120,000 unsolved murder cases in America.
It was the next day that I found out from my parents what had happened, that my sister was killed.
Each one is called a cold case.
Sometimes you have to look really closely to find the evidence.
Damn it, I killed her.
Damn it, I killed her.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
Garcia is walking into the home of a real monster.
I was nervous. I realized what kind of person I was dealing with.
It's a goosebump moment.
Download new episodes every Tuesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe at Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
Geico presents unhelpful home improvement how-tos.
A slippery bathroom floor can result in expensive hospital bills. So today, I'll show you how to cushion a serious fall by filling your bathroom with thousands of plastic balls. Just nail a piece of plywood across the doorway and dump in 2,000 multicolored plastic balls.
You could try to protect yourself with a bathroom full of plastic balls, or you could get liability coverage through the Geico Insurance Agency. Visit geico.com and see how affordable renter's insurance can be.
All right, we're back with our second car debate, which has, I think, the best subject line I've seen in a while. It's just this simple, guys, I need a date car.
I need a date car. His reason is actually kind of interesting. So he sounds like he just moved to Atlanta. He's single and he's 24. So, and he's driving a 2003 Honda Element, and he loves the thing. Mm-hmm. It's got almost 200,000 miles on it. But he says when he goes out on dates, it's got squeaks and rattles and creaks, and it's just not the nice car.
It's the 200,000 mile car he loves, and he's accepted every single quirk. But the problem there is you have to go, oh, no, I'm sorry, that door doesn't work. Oh, no, it's not that switch that works. You have to do this.
And yeah.
You don't want to explain that on a date. You just don't.
Especially a first date, because it's like, this guy has this car. What am I getting myself into?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Now, his biggest problem is his budget's not very high.
No, I would just say his budget is, frankly, a little bit too low for – it may be the smallest budget ever connected to I'm going to buy a date car.
That's true. So he says he's got about $5,000 to spend. And he was actually looking at old Miatas, mm-hmm. which you can get for that price day long.
Yeah.
But he adds that as much as I want to love them, I just don't like the way they look,
mm-hmm.
which is fair. They're not for everybody.
Yeah,
they're
absolutely.
Kind of plain Jane kind of style.
Mm-hmm.
But then he said he was looking at a 1976 MGB, which just drools with character and charm.
It does.
But at the same time, as much as you'd like that, most of the girls you're going to go out on date on will not like it at all. They won't appreciate
that. That is a challenge. I agree.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be that demeanor of why are you picking me up in this ancient car?
Yeah, this old jalopy here.
Yeah, there is that possibility. You're right.
Yeah, that's not to say that there won't be that special girl that just falls in love with it.
For sure.
But that is something that you'll have to keep in mind,
mm-hmm.
that with an older car, some girls will love it, some girls won't want to get in it.
True.
And so to start off, the car that I found, it's kind of leaning towards that Datsun, that's the car I picked.
Oh, okay, excellent.
So, going with the MGB idea, I found a 1968 Datsun Fairlady Roadster,
ooh.
much like the one we drove a couple years back.
Yeah.
For It's $7,000, so it's a little bit higher up.
Sure.
But the car looks immaculate. It's red. It's manual. It's
cool.
It's a great. It would be a great little car for your run around, cruise around on the weekends.
Well, that's the other key thing that we should include here is the fact that he really wants a convertible.
So yes.
Even though this is a date car, he personally just wants something that is small, fun to drive, and convertible. So that makes this $5,000 thing even harder, especially if you don't go Miata.
Yeah.
So that Datsun Roadster is a great idea.
Yeah, so I've got a couple other options here, but I'm curious to see where you ended up going.
Well, here's how these, and I didn't think this when I put this together tonight, but I realized I walked away from both of these with more advice than car recommendations.
Okay.
So I have some advice for Connor, but I also have a sniper shot.
Okay, so should I continue then?
I want you to go through all of yours, and then I want to talk to Connor about this problem for a minute. I want to give him an answer that I actually think gets this done.
Sure, sure.
But I think there's some discussion about the problem that needs to happen first. But yes, keep going with yours. I love the Datsun Fairlady, by the way.
Yeah, so one of the things that he says was he doesn't really want a fast car. It's a bonus.
That's not necessary.
It's a bonus, but it's not mm-hmm. necessary. So I kind of went with the more cruiser convertible type idea.
Okay, okay.
And so I got a couple of, I don't know if we've ever recommended some of these cars before.
Good, excellent.
We'll see where this
branches
goes.
Out. I like it.
But I found a bunch, well, not a bunch, that you can find these, the Lexus SC430. The hardtop convertible.
Yeah, but they're yuck.
They're not attractive. They are a $6,000 convertible.
Yeah,
but so there is that option.
Not
the one I would pick.
You're right. It does technically check boxes, but I cannot recommend that to anyone.
I wouldn't either, but it's a cruiser mobile. It'd be nice.
I see.
You roll up in a Lexus on a date.
I do see how you check boxes.
It checks boxes.
I do see that.
Maybe
for
not
sure.
The right ones, but it
Fair.
Does check some of
Fair.
The boxes.
Fair. Okay. All right.
And then I went with the MR2 Spider, or mm-hmm. MRS Spider.
For sure.
You can find those all day long for under $5,000.
Yes.
They're a great little car. They're fun.
Mm-hmm. They are the fantastic Miata alternative in this space, for sure.
I think I like the looks of the Miata better. I'm not really an MRS fan.
Yeah.
But so there is that. I was also looking at, you can get first-gen Audi TT Roadsters.
Hmm.
All day long, all-wheel drive, it's an Audi,
they
look good, girls love them.
Some of those first-gen TTs were money pits, be careful, but yes.
But you can find oodles of them.
Mm-hmm.
What was this one over here? Oh, I found two or three, these are a little harder to find, but Pontiac Solstice. I found a couple of
cheap,
those.
Really? Wow, that's okay.
And I think I wasn't going to call it a sniper shot, but this is my top pick.
Okay.
And that's the BMW Z3.
Dun, dun, dun. That is my sniper shot.
Oh, there you go.
Yes, that is my sniper shot. And so, I want to come back to that for sure.
So
keep
going. That's where I landed was the M3.
Okay.
Z3, sorry.
Yeah, that's an amazing little car that is really cheap and good for this money. Here's my comment to you first, Connor. This is a minefield, my friend.
Yes.
Because here's the thing. That Honda Element, you say you're going to drive it till the wheels fall off. There is that thing where whatever you pick a girl up in the first time, whoever you pick anybody up for a date for the first time, you've made an impression with your car.
Yeah, that's true.
And you don't really know what impression you've made because depending upon how they're wired, first date we're talking, depending upon how they're wired, you could have turned them on or turned them off for reasons you can't even possibly get ahead of.
Right.
You know, I mean, I want to come back to the BMW Z3 in a minute, but there will be people that the minute you pull up in a BMW Z3 convertible, they will put a stigma on you, pro or con, instantly.
Yeah, it's true.
This is the bigger problem. And also, you're asking us to recommend to you a car for $5,000 that's going to impress somebody. What's impressive about that is you have a nice working car for $5,000. That's the impressive part, okay?
Yeah. So some of these will have badge perception. So there will
for sure.
There will be that bonus.
Pro or con, honestly.
But they're, like you said, the Audi's a maintenance hog, some of them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the Z3s. They're German cars.
You know the old BMWs with high miles are going to take more, for sure.
And when things do happen, they're going to be more pricey than your Honda's going to be.
And depending upon who you pick up, they may see a BMW or an Audi on the drive and instantly think you're better or instantly think you're worse.
Yeah.
So the big thing for me is I'm very much shopping for you and thinking, okay, what's a good convertible non-Miata? that gives an impression that I had no idea this car was $5,000. That those were my actual parameters. And yeah, that's why I landed at the BMW Z3. Because for, with $5,000, you have options of these cars.
Oh, yeah.
Now, in some cases, you wind up with a really tiny 1.9-liter four-cylinder. You can find, I think it's a 2.86. You can find some of those, which is obviously the better engine would be nicer. But, you know, it is amazing how many of these are out there for that price. And I stand here astonished. Actually, technically, I'm sitting. But I stand here astonished that those cars, they are that cheap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was surprised at how many of them were around that price.
There were pages when I looked. There were pages I was scrolling through.
I think I saw 11 pages.
I was looking for options, going, well, which ones do I like? And then, of course, I had the terrible thing that happens to me because I have the disease of, do I need one? Do I need a Z3? What? I could drive a Z3 in the winter. I mean, crazy things went through my brain.
I was like,
oh, winter beater, Z3 convertible. That's insane, Todd. What are you doing? Conversely, that got me curious. I looked up the Z3 clown shoe, the hard top coupe.
Okay, yeah.
Can't touch them for under 20.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
And the nice ones with the big engine are going for like 30. And yet here the convertibles are a tenth of that. I was finding convertibles for $3,000.
Yeah.
Which is insane. So honestly, Connor, I think, and Chance is there and I'm there too, I think that's the sniper shot, because I don't think there's any chance anybody will think it's a $5,000 car. I will caution you, it will probably need stuff.
Yeah.
And it will be more expensive than your Honda Element will ever be to maintain. But that doesn't look like a $5,000 car.
No.
And I think it makes a great date impression, unless the person that you're taking out has some extra stigma, pro or con, just because it's a BMW.
Yeah.
What you want is to make no impression, negative or positive, with your car. You want it just to be the transportation that got us to a wonderful evening. That's all you want it to be on first date. To the point, in fact, this is crazy, to the point, when Paul had his first Cayman, he also had his Audi wagon.
Okay.
When he would go out on first dates, he would always take the wagon.
Makes sense.
Because he was just like, I just, Audi wagon is fine. It's nice. And of course, it was certified Paulin, so it was gorgeous.
Right.
But it was just nice wagon. It kind of said nothing. It was a silver wagon. So unless you were a car person, you didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
But it was a nice place to be. Perfect first date car.
Yeah.
He had a Cayman. And, you know, sometimes later dates, the Cayman came out, whatever impression that made. But that was something that he did very strategically. He was just like, you know what? I'm not going to pull up Porsche guy on first date. He just didn't want to do that.
Yeah, then that labels you.
And he didn't know what impression that would leave depending upon who was answering the door.
Yeah.
So this is the caution I have for you, Connor. But I love that we both wound up at Z3 convertible, because clearly I'm kind of going – this is for me the convertible equivalent of the Fiesta ST. It's like, why don't we all just have one? Do I need a BMW Z3 convertible? Maybe I do.
Z3, Z4, take your pick.
So cheap, though. Yeah. Crazy cheap.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so hopefully we've been helpful to both of you. I've been kind of off the map tonight in recommendations.
You've been all over the place.
In recommendations that are not really about cars.
I was thinking this on the way over that I think I'd fill in better for you than I do for Paul, because you and I are a lot more similar than
this is
you
true.
And Paul.
This is true.
And yet today you just blew all that out the window.
But what's nice is you say that. I kind of knew that you and I would probably wind up in similar places. However, I didn't expect you were going to find that Z3. So bravo to you on that. Because the other ones you brought up, except the Datsun was a good one too. The other ones you brought up was kind of like, yeah, I can see why you went on there. But the Z3 was a find.
Yeah.
So very good. We have many, many questions that you've sent in to us and or just Chance. So I want to jump into a lot of those. Right up front, I want to answer Matt Wong's question from Facebook. I have some details, but not a lot of details. Matt asked, updates on possible US-based track day adventures.
Yeah.
Yes, there are some updates. I want to talk through a little bit right now where Paul and I are on this. Again, we're about 2 weeks out from going to Germany for the Ring and Spa. Of course, Spa's in Belgium, but going to Europe for those two tracks. We're going at the beginning of September. We just dropped a piece today on the M235i from the Ring from actually last year.
Yep.
So we're going. We're very excited. But that's got us talking about later this fall doing U.S. track day stuff. Here's where we are on that. In order to do this, we're going to do, just like we did Chicago last year, we're going to partner with a group that already is doing a track day. And our initial idea has been to set it up like a U.S. version of this overseas trip, where it's, you know, you pay a fee and it's all-inclusive and you come and all that kind of thing. But there's a problem with that. As we talk it through, this is what we've come to. A lot of times, I'll give you an example. We're working on one very, like, seriously right now, working on one for Laguna Seca in November. Okay. We're down the road with a conversation with a company that's doing a track day. We want to do Laguna Seca and then a drive on whatever is open of PCH, because a lot of it's, you know, landslide and not open, but do that drive. But the thing is, if you're going to come to that, you have to bring your own car.
Right.
And a lot of the people that are going to come have already told us they want to come, and they live in the San Francisco area. So they're not going to need a hotel because they're probably just going to drive in for the day.
Right.
So how these U.S. trips will probably work is they will be – we will partner with a track group. We will tell you, come, and you will sign up for the track day by yourself and kind of plan your trip around that event. We will tell you what we're doing, in this case, the track day, probably a nice dinner that night that we'll all go to, and then the PCH drive in the morning. You stay where you want, which may be your own house. You bring your own car. There's really no way for us to build one trip fits all like we can for Europe.
Right.
So what these will probably be going forward is we will kind of put a stake in the ground for a track day with a track group, and they will be expecting those of you in the audience who want to come to be signing up and say, hey, I'm with Everyday Driver. And then we'll see you there. We'll plan a nice meal that we'll all do together. We'll do a fun event. But it won't be like we're all staying here and we're all doing this. It'll be much more a la carte because there's no way for us to get ahead of it. So, again, Laguna, middle of November, I'm going to get you dates soon. We have pushed off what was going to be a Road America track day in October because, essentially, it's full. So we've pushed that off, but we are – I'm almost not sure I'm supposed to say this.
All right.
We are talking – Paul and I are talking about maybe trying to figure out COTA.
Okay.
Circuit of the Americas in Austin in the spring. Very preliminary. But we have a lead on that, so we'd like to do that. But again, all of these will be – because you got to bring your own car. Unlike RSR in Germany, you got to bring your own car. You may live two blocks away, or you may have driven in cross-country. I simply don't know. There's no way for us to get ahead of it. So this is our plan. We may, if we do things like COTA, we may figure out a block of rooms so you can get a little bit of a discount. But we're not going to set up full trips. That was like 10 minutes. I meant it to be like two. Anyway, hopefully that helps, Matt. Anyone else is curious? That's what's going on.
There's not a lot of – quote unquote destination tracks in the U.S. like there are in Europe. So there's not these RSR type companies here.
That's the harder part.
There are, but there's not.
That's the harder part. It's less, because here's the thing. If I knew you could fly into the West Coast, you could fly into the Monterey area, Carmel, San Francisco, and we could have cars available to you that you could drive on the street and you could drive on the track, I would start building. We would work much harder on building an all-in-one, all-inclusive trip.
Oh, yeah.
But you're going to have to bring your own car. And you, and like I say, you may live down the block from the track already.
Right.
So I can't build that trip for you. So that's why we're doing it this way.
Yeah. So Tyler Hill asked about what my camera gear was for shooting, since we were talking about that earlier. I use a Canon 6D, and my primary lens for like beauty shots has been a 28-70mm 2.8. So it's an older version. It's two or three generations old now. It's not serviceable anymore, unfortunately. That's how old it is. But it's a solid lens. And I've got a 50mm 1.2.
Oof.
And then when I go to the track, I typically use the show's 100 to 400.
Our big boy. We've got one of those big white Canon sports lenses that is it's a massive lens. And Chance has gotten really good with it. But it's also got huge reach. So you can stand on the side of a track and you can reach way over there and get something cool, which is great.
Right. And there's a lens I want by Sigma. And it's a 150 to 600 millimeter lens.
Ooh.
And it's meant just for racing and the
like.
Oh,
interesting.
So it's perfect for what I want to use.
That's cool.
Just don't have the money for it.
Yeah. Well, this is the problem. I mean, lenses make all the difference, and lenses are wickedly expensive.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's better to upgrade your lenses than it is your camera body.
Without question. No, I mean, we do that like crazy on the show, Art. None of the camera bodies we use are impressive. We almost treat them disposably, but the lenses are gold. So that's absolutely the way we treat it.
Yeah, for sure.
Matt asked a question that I know you have a great answer for as well, Chance. Matt Levesque said, okay, what's our racing video game setup like? What do we like game-wise, and what do we wish it was? Now, I'm going to answer first because my answer is not as cool as yours.
I don't know about that.
This is true. I've played a lot of racing games. I've played Gran Turismo. I have a PlayStation, so I don't play Forza because obviously that's locked into Xbox.
Right.
So I play the PlayStation games, but I like Gran Turismo. I'm looking for another one. I wish they would come out more than every 5 years. Gran Turismo.
No problem.
Project Cars is good. Assetto Corsa I really like. What else have I played? Pretty much any other one you can imagine on PlayStation. Oh, I've done the, what's the car club one that they've got in VR now? I'm driving that only because it's VR.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't
think of the name of it right now. Clearly, it made a big impression. But I'm driving only because it's VR. And my son actually likes it because it's VR, too. He does this funny thing when you play VR on this game where if he's not in the glasses, he will sit in what would be the passenger seat and yell at you.
Oh, yeah.
He does that now, which is quite interesting.
Funny.
So that happens. So I play all of those. I have a fold down and put away setup for my wheel. So the wheel pedals are attached to this thing, this rig I can pull out and kind of unfold. And now it's pedals and wheels on a stand. And you can sit in a gaming chair on the floor and it works perfectly.
Right.
Because just the way my life is arranged, I can't, and also for my wife's sanity, I can't leave that stuff just sitting in our main room.
Yeah.
So we just don't have the room and the ability to do it. So we pull it out, set it up, drive for a few hours, put it back. What I would like, to answer your question, is I would like a dedicated dual, meaning side by side, two systems. If I could make my perfect system, it would be two racing chairs, permanent racing chairs, side by side, into two matching systems. The systems are wired to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
And each wearer has VR goggles. So you can race each other, you're in VR, and you're side by side. That would be my perfect version. At some point, I'm sure my son will be old enough and my money will be good enough and the games will be good enough that we'll build that in probably what is currently my son's playroom, and my wife will have to unplug, probably like kill the fuse to get us out of there. And my son will probably kill me in those games all the time. So hopefully Matt will head that way. But right now I have this little fold down, fold up thing.
Yeah, I've actually got a similar setup. It was last year, just before Christmas time, we all gathered at Todd's house. And Todd, Paul, myself, our wives, we all played a bunch of your VR games.
Yes.
And we played, I think it was Assetto Corsa on your wheel.
Mm-hmm, for sure, yeah.
And I didn't have a wheel at the time. I was like, I need one of these now.
I remember. Your wife kept looking at me like, thanks, Todd.
Yeah,
appreciate it. That's
pretty
great.
Much. Well, she loves it too, though. Actually,
I know. I know.
That's the thing.
But she realized this is where you were going, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So for Christmas, my wife got me Assetto Corsa, and then together we got a dedicated racing wheel and chair set up. It doesn't fold away. You can take it all apart, but it doesn't fold away.
But you have the seat that sits in the room and you can jump in anytime. And I
move it out of the way. It's kind of big and clunky, and it is kind of annoying to have to do that. But
it's awesome.
When I want to use it, it works great. It's like a real car seat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like with bolsters and everything.
Totally.
And it's pretty awesome. But I've had all the Forza games. I've had Gran Turismo through the fourth one. And that's when I switched to Forza. Because, you know, like you said, Gran Turismo kind of disappears for a while.
Yeah, every 5 years they show up. And then they blow a deadline. There's like, nothing's going to come out in 5 years. 7 years later it shows up. Yeah.
But I've been leaning towards, I like Assetto Corsa. It's a great simulator. But I like Project Cars a little better. I'm not sure why. I like the career mode a lot better.
Project Cars is much deeper as a game and as an interface, but I think Assetto Corsa, I'm way in the weeds here, but I think Assetto Corsa has better physics.
Okay.
I think I could be wrong, but I get the impression anytime I'm about to say a sentence that I cannot believe is going to come out of my mouth. When I return from Germany having driven the ring, when I drive the ring in Project Cars and I drive it in Assetto Corsa, I think it's more correct than Assetto Corsa.
Okay, yeah, I can see that.
This is me really cutting this down finally here. But I prefer the driving itself in Assetto Corsa, but I think everything else, you can clearly tell that Assetto Corsa is a very small studio and Project Cars is a studio with some money behind it.
Yeah.
Because the games, the interface, and the depth of them works that way.
Yeah, and both of them, I mean, can you compare them? I don't know which one is really better.
That's a good question.
They're both
there's trade-offs. Developed.
They both use professional race car drivers and test drivers to help set it up, and so take your pick, whichever one you like better, really.
Yes. And the next round, both Project Cars 2 and the new Gran Turismo, and I think there's another one, but those two, for sure, I've heard of both of them, are coming out fully VR capable, and I am very excited.
Yeah, so am I. That'll be cool to
Drive Club is the current VR one that I have.
Okay,
sorry. Eventually, it's coming to my brain. So there is the very long answer, Matt, to that racing question.
Yeah, so a different Matt asked more towards me. He's either has or is looking at buying a 1961 Ford Falcon. And he was asking if it's worthwhile to put the drivetrain from an SN95 Cobra Mustang, so that's 94 to two, 94 to 98.
Is that the
Mustang
one with the independent rear?
No.
Okay.
No. Right. Well, depends. So the SN95 really goes from 94 to 2004.
Mm-hmm.
The latter generation is the facelifted cars that they call them New Edge cars.
They're
the same but different.
Okay.
Those are the independent rear suspension cars.
Because I knew a lot of people chase those. I will admit I love having chance around when Mustang questions come up because I know just enough to get myself in trouble. That's really my Mustang. My Mustang love is not that deep, and so my information is not that dense. And so I can tell you some things, but if people get into the weeds on codes and things, I have to call Chance and go, please direct me.
Yeah. So they get confusing too. It's just like the BMWs and any car once you start getting into the codes.
For
it's
sure,
are we really doing this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and sadly we are.
We're uber nerds at this point.
We are, absolutely, yeah.
But he's asking, is it worthwhile? Is it an unrealistic dream? Should he chase it? How do you budget for something like that? And the answer is yes, it's very much worthwhile if you have the wrenching skills.
Mm.
That's where it can really get you.
For
with
sure.
That car
for sure.
And that motor, you're going to have to do a lot of fabrication and things to make it work. But if you do, then you have modern horsepower, you have fuel injection, better miles, MPGs.
Yeah.
And it'll be more reliable. So there are trade-offs. You'll get the purists that'll think you're nuts because it doesn't have the old 260 or 289 or whatever is in it.
Yeah.
But also, I would say be prepared and patient because it's going to take a lot longer than you expect it to.
Project car.
Exactly. But
yeah,
as for
that.
Budgeting for it, the easiest thing for me anyways is I pick what I want next and I start saving for that.
Mm-hmm.
But if something that I also have on my list of things that I want comes up and there's a deal that maybe I found it used somewhere,
mm-hmm.
I'll deviate and go get it. But I would also say, don't get something just because it's cheap. Because if it's not what you're actually wanting, you end up buying it, and then you're more than likely going to hate it. You won't think you will, but you will.
You're talking about spending the money on the right version of the right part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then if you don't like it, then you're just going to get the thing you wanted in the first place, and you've spent twice the money.
You bought the thing twice and only one time for real. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one of the issues to watch out for. And it's easy to do. You see something, you're like, oh, that's a lot like this. I can make that work. Mm-hmm. No, don't. Just walk away. Just turn around and walk away.
Save yourself the trouble. I like that. That's excellent. So, that's excellent.
But that leads me into Christoph MM on Instagram. He was asking me about modernizing my Mustang.
Yeah.
Which I've kind of been doing.
I've got
a modern motor in it. I've got a 5.0 from a Fox Body.
Mm-hmm.
It's fuel injected. I've got a 5-speed transmission. I've got... Currently, it has more modern brakes from a 19...
You can't see the massive air quotes that are happening right now. Yeah.
From a 1977 Ford Granada.
Ooh, the latest and greatest
of 1977.
Right, perfect.
But sitting in my garage, I have front brakes off of a 2007 Mustang GT.
Okay, good.
And I have rear brakes off of a 95 Mustang GT.
Interesting.
So
they're just Legos, aren't they?
Just about.
You're just you're all over the map.
These adapter kits and they
of course
right on.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, modernizing Mustangs. A lot of people are doing it. I'm kind of doing it.
You are for sure. And I still want to do and Ty, I know, is listening. He's locally got access to a pretty close to stock restored 67 or 68.
68, yeah.
Want to put that car with your same era but not stock, much more resto mod, and discuss those. That'd be really cool.
We are actually, I haven't committed to it yet, but we're talking about autocrossing both cars this weekend.
Really?
So that might be happening.
That's fascinating. I want to hear about that for sure. Let's see. Jake DeWald wrote in on IG and he said, you're right, Jake, about this question. We're probably the wrong people to ask, but would we recommend spending $5,000 over your budget to get the hot version of the car you want or to stay not add that $5,000 and get the lower version of the same car? You're right, Jake. This is a landmine because we're going to say, of course, spend more money, especially if Paul were here. But I will say this to you. Honestly, here's my genuine answer. If the difference we're talking about is really like $5,000, yes, go up.
Do it, yeah.
If it's 10, 15, no.
Yeah.
But if it's really five, if we're really talking about it, you're that close to getting the right one. I'll give you an example. If you said to me you were buying a used Porsche Cayman and you could find a used Porsche Cayman base for $18,000.
Yep.
And you could find a Cayman S for $22,000. get the S.
Yeah, get the S.
Just go get the S. You'll be happier. So that's the thing. I think, is there a tipping point? There is. I mean, the reason I have, let's be honest, the reason I bought an Elise and not an Evora or a 1M is because those were 10 to 15 grand above my budget.
Yeah.
That's why I did not buy one. There is a limit to this, and you have to figure out your own pain tolerance. But at $5,000, especially if you're financing this thing for 5, 6, 7 years, that $5,000 amortized out, I mean, granted, I'm giving financial advice now, which is really, really bad. But honestly, $5,000 makes such a little change in your monthly payment, yeah, if you're actually doing monthly payments, yeah, that I think it's worth it.
I agree.
So there's that.
But if it's something like a Mustang GT brand new versus a GT350 brand new, you got a $20,000 difference.
True.
Then, yeah. Just yes, save your money.
Then you, yeah, absolutely, yeah, true. I agree with that. Julian wrote in and said, baby seating an M2. What do we think? Yeah, exactly. That's the short answer. First question, Julian, is how big are you and your wife? Are you large people like Paul and I, or are you going to have the seats all the way back is the big question. Because I would say this, booster seat or front-facing child seat all day long. Rear-facing trash can baby seat could be problematic.
True.
It would probably fit if you don't have to have the back seat all the way back. If your wife is small enough and that works out, great. I don't think you have a problem. The problem is going to be getting the child in the rear-facing seat. Will it work? I think so, but the rear-facing is going to be much harder than the front-facing. Front-facing or booster seat, yes, absolutely. Get yourself a 1M and enjoy it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if you could make this car seat fit, then why not?
Yeah, the struggle is those rear-facing ones can be really hard to get kids in and, yeah, out of. I mean, there's the rear-facing when they literally, you carry them in the carrier and you plug it into the base. That's the greatest thing ever.
I'm sure, yeah.
You need one arm and an opening and you're done. But once the rear-facing is locked in and you got to like reach around, because of course it's a two-door car, that can be hard.
Right.
So that's going to be the hard part. But again, once they go front-facing, you're great.
Yeah. Damien C. asks if he can drive a Porsche Cayman S through Canadian weather year-round. I already linked him to this, but I actually covered that in an article past winter.
You did, yeah.
About mostly my wife driving it, but we've got a 2008 Porsche Boxster that, mm-hmm, gets daily driven through Utah winters.
Absolutely.
Which aren't really that much different than Canadian winters.
That's true.
As much as YouTube would like to disagree with us.
Yeah. But, you know, we just, the FRS piece, we just weren't in enough of a blizzard. This is the problem. And the entire country of Canada is mad at us still, but it's okay.
But yeah, with proper tires on that car, absolutely you can.
Yeah, I agree.
Absolutely,
I agree.
You can. Is there any other questions that stuck out to
Well,
you?
Yes. I mean, there's four or five more that I would cover, but I'm going to cover only a couple more. There was a question about, in fact, I don't have it in front of me, but there was a question on Instagram, I think it was, about buying a EcoBoost Mustang.
Oh, I missed that one.
And EcoBoost Mustang, would, as an enthusiast, would you like having it 300 horsepower, 30 grand? Is it cool? Would we like it? Yes, but I will say this to you, and I like the EcoBoost. I really like the current gen Mustang, but my recommendation to you is, if you're considering the EcoBoost, could you get a 1 year used GT?
Yeah.
Because that V8, while heavier, and yes, it consumes a little more, not as much as you think more, but it does consume, yep, more gas. The thing about the GT is it gains more personality when you add that V8 back in.
Yeah.
And the current gen Mustang is really fantastic to drive in every form.
Yeah, it is.
I think you gain that extra bit. I mean, it's becoming very sports car in chassis feel, which is awesome. But if you can gain that V8 muscle car attitude back, that's just a win.
Yeah.
So I would almost say if you can get a brand new EcoBoost versus a one-year-old GT, go GT. I think you'd be happier.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I haven't driven a stock EcoBoost Mustang. I've driven a tuned one that had...
Sure.
It was like 290 something to the wheels and, okay, 400 pound feet of torque, which was a fast car. I'll
for
give,
sure,
give it that.
For sure, it's a lot of torque. Yeah,
but for me personally, now this is the Mustang purist.
You
I
are
guess.
The Mustang guy for sure. Yeah,
hearing the four cylinder and the turbo, it sounds good. I will admit, I like
independent
I like the
of
way
a
it
Mustang.
Sounds.
Yeah,
but you see what it's coming out of. Like, wait, did I see that right? What was
interesting?
That was,
yeah,
a Mustang that made that sound.
I see,
okay,
that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you hear the big GT and the V8 and just the booming exhaust and thunderous noise.
It adds a layer to that car for sure.
It's more of what you expect.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree.
And even talking about Tom, he's had an EcoBoost recently and he drove the GT that long ago either, and loved the GT.
For sure.
When he had the GT, he and I were talking that when Ford announced doing the EcoBoost Mustang, that was originally for Europe only.
It was.
They weren't going to bring it here. And he told me that no one's buying those in Europe.
Yeah.
No one is, because they all want the true American car.
Germany specifically is buying the V8s as fast as they can sell, as they can make them, which is pretty crazy. I have one more question in case you've got any others.
No, that's go for it.
Okay. Will wrote in on Twitter, two-part question.
Okay.
I'm going to answer the second part first because it's easier, I think. But the first part is, if we were to buy one car to keep and use forever, what would it be? That's a hard one. I have a couple answers, but it's a hard one. The second part of the question is, what would we suggest is a budget Huracan?
Budget Huracan?
And here's my answer on that. First gen R8.
First gen
V8 R8. They're under 100 grand now. They're running like 60 to 80.
Yeah,
you can, all-wheel
you
drive.
Say, but you can get a Gallardo.
Yes, but the Gallardos are still going to be—they're still going to be the better part of 100 grand.
Yeah, but
and
not
they're not going to be
100, 110 for
V10. Okay,
the early ones.
I mean, yes, I suppose you could do that. I'm much more worried, I guess, about the old Gallardo than I am about the old R8. Maybe I'm being insane to say that.
The big difference between, well, with the Huracan, the big difference between the R8 is you can get it with a manual. You can get both the Gallardo and the R8 in manuals, and that would be what I would do.
True.
I mean,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
Gated shifters.
The gated shifter on the original V8 R8, that remains on my personal shortlist. That's a great, great car.
Yeah.
The Forever car is hard.
That is a tricky one.
There's two answers here. The first one I'm going to answer with the car I think I really would go with. The second one is the one that I think maybe makes more sense.
Okay.
But the one I would really go with is I would buy an Evora 400 and just drive it until it fell apart, which, who knows, might be quickly, but drive it.
The way you drive
it. I loved the 400, and it really, the issues that did exist with the Evora I think are solved there. It is a much more refined car.
Yeah.
It is technically 2+2. It's got, I mean, compared to the Elise, it's got a cavernous trunk. But no, it's a genuinely usable car.
Yep.
And I could see myself using it all the time. I mean, the Elise I love, but the Elise certainly is compromised in certain situations, which is one of the things that makes it great. The Evora is far less so. So I would say the Evora 400. However, the car that I think might even make more sense, if we're buying a car, kind of a money no object, buying a car and keeping it forever, it needs to do everything. I live in Utah. I need to maybe road trip. I want to go to the track. I need to pick up groceries. 991 911 Turbo.
Okay. Yeah.
All-wheel drive, crazy fast. It can track. It can GT. It can run for groceries. I think that might be the answer.
That's hard to argue with, to be honest.
And I'm not even the Porsche guy, and yet I just kind of see the I'm going to say something that Paul would smack me for, so I'm going to say it now because you're here. The 911 is almost the SUV of sports cars. It does everything.
It kind of is.
It does everything.
I agree with that. Yeah, you can throw things in it. You can take it to across the country.
And
in
the 991 form, I don't like it as much as the 997 because for me it's gotten too big for a sports car, but it has gained usable back seats.
Yeah.
So that's starting to be – yeah, there it is.
Yeah. I guess my follow-up question is this supposed to be one car forever that's the only car you have, or is this your toy?
Unknown. Okay. Unknown. But of course, I'm just gonna sacrifice and try to get something fun.
Okay, so I guess if it's my one car to have, I would do the Audi RS7. Mm. It's got four doors. It's technically a hatchback, plenty of power. It's not the most dynamically exciting car. But it's got power and it can do it all.
Yeah, I see that.
But if it was my one car forever that's just a toy, then I'd probably go like a GT350R.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not surprised. It's me. It's
the Mustang guy has come back. Excellent. That's very good.
I've wanted one for a long time.
They're awesome.
I'm hoping, knock on wood, I will be shocked if it happens. I'm hoping that in the next 3 or 4 years, prices will come down enough that by the time I graduate, that can be what I end up getting.
Yeah, I can see that.
We'll see.
That would be a fantastic car for you. We'll see what really happens with those prices. Thankfully,
that's the thing.
Massive dealer markup is mostly over now.
Yeah.
Mostly. So that means they'll start to come down into the realm of used prices.
If they do what the GT500s are doing, the 3-year-old cars are
cheap.
35, 40.
Yeah.
So that's
crazy.
That's
crazy.
Reachable.
Well, guys, thank you for listening. Chance, thank you for being here, man. Thanks for coming in for Paul. Great podcast tonight with hearing about Pirelli World Challenge. I really appreciate that. And thank you guys for asking Chance questions and asking us questions in general. Thank you for your car debates, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or through the website, everydaydriver.com. You can do the contact form there. We do read all of them, even if we don't share all of them here on the podcast. If you have not rated the podcast, we would appreciate that. Oh, and a quick tease. We have just heard from the Podcast One folks twice a year. They do a survey. It is an audience survey that if you guys fill it out, it allows them to better pair advertising with you guys.
Yeah,
so you're not hearing ads that are just like, why is this ad playing?
Yeah.
We obviously are new to Podcast One. They do this survey twice a year. When that launches in a year or so, in a week or so, we will tell you more about it because we would love to have you guys fill it out so that the podcast relates even further to you and somebody random. So we'll tell you about that. That is coming. Again, podcasts continue twice a week. Videos are coming as fast as we can make them. Wow, there's a lot going on as we prep for season two.
Yes. I've been looking at my calendar lately, and every weekend is booked like throughout the rest of the year almost.
Yep. We are headed into, for us shooting-wise, probably the busiest 2 months of the year. Nothing to do, but we're headed to Lemons, first off, and many other things to follow. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll hear you next time.
See ya.
Let me tell you about Pete, who loved hockey and always wanted to play in the NHL. Pete played since he was three and begged his mom to let him stay on the ice. Why, some nights he even slept in his hockey skates. Pete practiced and practiced until one day, when he was 47, Pete realized he just wasn't that good. So he threw his skates in the trash. But then he heard how Geico, proud partner of the NHL, could save him money on car insurance. So he switched and saved a bunch. So it all worked out.
ADT can design and install a smart home just for you, backed by 24/7 protection. A new smart home at your service, customized for your lifestyle. Set up custom automations unique to your home to automatically do the things like lock the doors or set the thermostat when you leave. Even close your garage door from virtually anywhere. ADT will set up your home with multiple smart home devices and security features like indoor and outdoor cameras, locks, lights, and garage door control, even video doorbells. Visit ADT.com/podcasts to learn more about how ADT can design and install a secure smart home just for you.